Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gutapi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a Swangles
and I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Rumble, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate the support. We couldn't do it without you, without the support of our amazing sponsors. Chemical Free Body has been with us from the very beginning. They're making fantastic supplements that actually work. Take a look. Go to chemicalfreebody.com. Find something there. Use the promo code MACRO to save you a little bit of money. The detox bundle is a great place to start. It's a 90-day program. It'll lean you out. You just take a handful of capsules every morning and you drink your Green 85 drink. So it's pretty easy. It's not a time commitment or anything like that. You just kind of have to decide that that's what you're going to do. And now we're in New Year's resolution time. So if that is your resolution to get yourself healthy, well, you're going to still have to be the one to do it. But if you have the right sort of help, Tim James has a podcast. You can listen to his podcast as well. He'll give you information on that. If you want to hire him directly to be a coach, you can do that. He's not as available these days because they're out of their minds over there at Chemical Free Body. Everything is booming right now, but you're going to have to make the decision yourself. So if this is the year 2024 that you finally decide you're going to get control of your own health, go to chemicalfreebody.com and just read up about it. See what you think about the products there. If you find something you like, the promo code is MACRO. Also, thanks to the folks at EMP Shield. They're building the best shielding device out there. It's many times more impactful than even the military grade designs that they've got, which is crazy. It can withstand 40 EMP strikes. I mean, your nerves can't. You'll be checked into the funny farm well before the 40th EMP strike happens, but your EMP shield will work. So they've got it for your home, for your car, motorhomes, boats, generators, bundle packages. You can install it yourself if you're handy. You can watch installation videos and do it yourself. It installs like a type 2 surge protector with just 4 wires. So it's relatively easy to do, or you can have an electrician come out and do it. Get the promo bundle packages, because then you can get a couple of them, brings the dollar per unit down. So go to empshield.com, and the promo code over there is MACRO, of course. And we hope that, I hope you don't need it, but it is 2024. You might. All bets are off this year. We've got an election. We've got a potential economic collapse. It's going to be wild. But, if you are interested in writing out the apocalypse with me in Acapulco, Mexico, the second week of February, I would really highly encourage you to get your ass to Mexico and go to Anarchapulco. It is the largest anarchist conference in the world. This is the 10th anniversary of it. I'm going to be the host and MC this year. It's It's just the best week of the year. It'll be the best week of your year. I promise you. There is so much going on. There's almost too much going on down there. You're going to meet interesting people. You're going to get some amazing life experiences, the type of stuff you can't buy in a store. You're going to meet friends. You're going to have drinks. You're going to go to the beach. You're going to learn about anarchy and crypto. And you're going to hear from all the doctors. Those guys are all there. The alternative media is going to be there. TNT Radio, I think, is going to be broadcasting from there. It's a wild week, man. So anarchapulco.com is the place to go. And the promo code is macro. Well, episode 400, you might notice some changes. I want to, first of all, I want to thank Alika for the gas mask logo that served us very well for 4 years. Thank you, Alika. You have my love forever for that one. 400 episodes is a lot. We do two a week. So we're, 104 a year. It's quite a bit of work. I love doing it. The sponsors, I know you guys sit through, or maybe you fast forward through some of the early parts of the show when I talk about the sponsors, and I understand that. I get it. You get the show for free. I've got to have sponsors that make up the difference there. So, and I try to give you sponsors that make sense and are relevant. If you are interested in finding out information about my sponsors, you can also go to the brand new website that is now up and running, www.macroaggressions.io. It is in the description of the show notes. You can find it there, or just macroaggressions.io will take you there. It'll give you everything that you need to know about the shows, the books, the radio show, appearances, all the stuff that I'm up to. And big thanks to Tony Merkel, my partner on Macro Aggressions, who you never see or you see very rarely here, but he makes it all sound, Tony and Jack, they make it sound amazing. So thanks to those guys, and thanks for all the help getting this rebranding done, because the website's a pain, of course. The new intro, we're not ever going to change the intro, but the video part of the intro is crazy now. Big thanks to Jason Dahl for that, who made the intro for me. And he knew exactly what I was looking for. So I'm excited. It seems like we needed to do a little refreshing around here. We're going into a very interesting year. 2024, I think, is going to be filled with all sorts of uncertainty. I'm not trying to speak that into existence. I don't know. I am conflicted, because on the one hand, I feel like these people are on the run a little bit. It doesn't feel like their plans are going according to schedule. And I love that. But I also know that these people don't like to lose. And if you corner them, they are going to be very dangerous, even more dangerous than they are right now. So the house of cards with relation to the banking industry seems like it's coming unglued. And that's going to spell disaster for a lot of these globalist people. And I wanted to do a show that kind of looks back into part of the problem, part of the reason why these people are even in a position to control our lives in the first place. And I wanted to talk about this group that's known as the Eastern Establishment. It's an unofficial term, of course, but I think you kind of know a little bit about who I'm talking about. It's the, geographically, we're not talking about the East, like the Southeast of the United States. We're talking about the Northeast. We're talking about that Pennsylvania, New York, Massachusetts, Washington, D.C. area around the Northeastern part of the United States, which was a hotbed for people, especially immigrants coming to the United States from Europe. It's obviously geographically the first place you would come into the States that way. So it was developed first. 13 colonies were there first. I'm not trying to turn this into some sort of weird history lesson on that or anything, but it makes sense that a lot of the power emanated from that region. And over the decades, over the centuries, really, it started to take on a little bit of a well, there was a name for it, and it was the Eastern Establishment. And part of that group, part of that were sort of that unofficial group known as the Eastern Establishment, were groups that you might have heard the names of, Skull and Bones, Bonesmen, things like that. But there's a group that you probably haven't heard too much about, and that's the Pilgrim Society. Now, I mean, you talk about rebranding. I mean, the idea of the Pilgrim Society being a dangerous group, you're like, oh, really? With their fancy brown hats and their Thanksgiving dinner and inviting the Indians over and all that stuff? Oh, these are the pilgrims that I read about. No. They need a rebranding if they want a scarier name. But if they want to stay under the radar, they could just keep themselves branded the way they are, because nobody talks about the Pilgrim Society. And you should. And we're going to. And the reason why we're going to is because nobody does. And it's a group of people. Once we go through this whole thing, you're going to be like, how did I never hear about these people? That this sounds like I know all these groups. I know all these companies and institutions that are connected to it. How am I the last person to hear about the Pilgrim Society? Well, don't feel bad. You see, part of the reason why you don't hear about them is because they own the media. You know, there's the whole concept of like, well, you know, the Jews run the media and things like, well, yes and no. This group owns the media. The Jews run the media, right? You know what I mean? So, I mean, I'm not saying anything that they don't say about themselves when there aren't any Jews around, right? They talk about this stuff openly. It's no secret. And it certainly isn't a put down if to say that some group is in control of a segment of industry. It's very true. But when you dig into a lot of the ownership of the mainstream media, what you will find in actuality is that it's owned by the pilgrims. It's owned by people connected to the Pilgrim Society. So I want to get into this and sort of maybe start a little bit at the beginning. This group started in 1902. So I'm not going to go all the way back to the very, very beginning, but we're talking about a century of being in control. It's collectively, they're known as the Anglo-American Establishment. They also, you would hear them called the WASP Elite. That's another acronym. You know how I love acronyms, White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. That was like, when you read like those truly tasteless joke books, volume one through, I don't know, 8,000, however many they've made, there's always like, there's a section on making fun of Mexicans and making fun of Black people and making fun of Jewish people. And then there's a section making fun of WASPs. And if you ever were like, what are WASPs? White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. It's honkies, okay? White devils. That's what we're talking about here. And so in the U.S., this is mostly like East Coast elite, New York City, D.C., Ivy League schools, specifically Harvard, Yale, and Princeton. Those are the big ones there. But it's not limited to the United States. In fact, it has a franchise, if you want to think of it like that, in the U.K. And it was run by a guy named Lord Carrington, a former Secretary General of NATO. He ran the UK version of the Pilgrim Society from 1983 to 2002. So damn near two decades. And this is a guy who, if you're like, who's Lord Carrington? It sounds kind of familiar. Well, he was a chairman of Bilderberg, and he was a 14-time participant in it. So he's a guy that knows his way around the world government's scene. And he's Lord Carrington. So if you're Lord anything, you probably fuck kids. I mean, I don't know if you officially do, but you probably do. I'm just going to say that until someone proves me wrong. But in this UK franchise of the Pilgrims, you have 18 different Bank of England governors. So it's a very powerful group to come out of. There's a huge banking component to the Pilgrim Society. It's not limited to that, of course, but it's part of it. And so when you're talking about the UK version of it, you're starting to get into banks that have ties to or members that have ties to Goldman Sachs and Lazard and the Rockefellers and the British Eugenics Society. So think of all that oh, all the Cecil Rhodes stuff, you know, all the round table. And this is going on about that time, right? This is early 1900s. Round table was like late 1800s, early 1900s when it was really taking off. British Eugenics Society, you know, so it's like you could just picture all these honkies sitting around a table deciding which brown people needed to leave the planet. You know, it's that sort of thing. And so the UK version of it is one part, but it's significant. It's worth mentioning for sure, because, you know, especially because of we see sort of the overlap between CFR and Chatham House and this sort of reciprocity between the UK and the United States when it comes to some of these semi-secret societies and think tanks and NGOs. So, and Pilgrims is really no different from that. It's still mostly America-centric, but not completely. The UK version does have some pretty influential people in it, but they get dwarfed when you hear about who is involved in this group on the American side, because it is, it's like a who's who of spooks and internationalists, like David Rockefeller describes himself, and spies and all kinds of weirdos. So we'll get into this. If you want to think of it in terms of some of these multinational world government firms that are involved in it, I'll tell you some of the major ones that are brawling with Pilgrims. That would be NATO, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the United Nations, and basically anything David Rockefeller is involved in. And if you look at the Rockefeller pyramid, you would find the United Nations, the IMF, the World Bank all fall under the Rockefeller started United Nations umbrella. And then NATO, of course, is the World Army, you know, if you want to just think of it like that. Every member of the Rockefeller family are lifelong pilgrims, multi-generational. If you're a Rockefeller, you're a member of the Pilgrim Society. Both of the Dulles brothers were pilgrims. Kissinger was a pilgrim. Just the idea of him wearing one of those pilgrim hats kind of cracks me up. Paul Volcker was a pilgrim. He's deeply connected to both the Rockefellers and Rothschilds. He's a dangerous individual. Robert McNamara, who was the Secretary of Defense who started the Vietnam War, he was a pilgrim. George Shultz, Caspar Weinberger, these are both Secretary of Defenses in the Reagan era. Those are both pilgrims. So you see a lot of infiltration into the White House and specifically areas of Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State. You'll find a lot of those people that have ties to the pilgrims. But let's be clear about who these people are and really who they aren't. The people in the Pilgrim Society aren't neocons. They aren't your traditional neocons, and they aren't Zionists, okay? They're sort of a different breed. Now, they work with both groups, of course, and they're Republican connected. You'll find it very heavy Republican leaning, but they're politically bisexual. You know, they'll fuck anybody. They don't care. So if you go through this, you're going to find a lot of Republican administrations that have these guys. But that's not to say that the Democrats are somehow unable or unwilling to work with pilgrims. They certainly are. It's just that it's just an ideological slant to it. And it tends to lean a little bit more right than left, and for whatever reason. And Rockefeller connected deep state faction has an oversized say in how the U.S. Pilgrim Society runs. And you'll know that because of some of the people that are high-ranking members there, or at least were until they, you know, eventually died. Like Henry Kissinger, 100 years old. This is a big new Brzezinski, deeply involved. David Rockefeller, that should go without saying. But again, the Venn diagram of secret society, world government, NGO groups, there's a lot of interlocking parts here, because you would be forgiven if you thought that when I'm talking about the pilgrims, I was actually talking about the Trilateral Commission, because there are a lot of trilateral members that are members of the, hell, David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski founded the Trilateral Commission, and they are also high-ranking members of the Pilgrim Society. So, you know, when you sit down and talk to a guy like David Rockefeller, you know, of course, yes, now he's dead. But if you had had that horrifying honor of talking to him, who would you be talking to? Would you be talking to the United Nations, David Rockefeller, the Pilgrim Society, David Rockefeller, the Trilateral guy, like the, you know, who are we? In the end, it's the same thing. It's world government. It's a lot of really rich industrialists looking to increase their wealth at the expense of who cares, people, the planet, pollution, raw material waste, bombs, famine, starving. They don't give a shit about any of that stuff. Like the moral hangups that we have, like, oh, I wouldn't, like, I want to grow my business, but not at the extent, like, I don't want to murder people in order to do it. They don't care about that stuff. They're freed up to cross those lines because they're psychopaths. So a lot of this stuff, when you hear some of these names, you're going to be like, well, that guy is United Nations. Yes. And he's a pilgrim as well. So part of this is sort of, I want to go through some of the Reagan connected ones. Now, this is now for those that aren't super familiar with American politics, Ronald Reagan was the president from, he was elected in 80. They technically go into office in January of 81 to 89, right? So, but essentially he's, you know, for the 80s, let's just say. George H.W. Bush came in, finished up the final 2 years of the 80s and then the first 2 years of the 90s. But during that period of the 80s, when Ronald Reagan was the president for 8 years and the United States was deeply involved in a Cold War that his people were provoking and keeping going, just understand that his group, the high-ranking people inside his administration were all pilgrims. And so George Shultz, Secretary of State, Caspar Weinberger, Secretary of State, Donald Rumsfeld, Secretary of Defense. And I understand he wasn't in Reagan's, he was before and after Reagan. Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State. Another thing that you'll kind of notice if you want to extend the Venn diagram by adding another circle to it appropriately, you would look at the group Les Cercles, which is the French word for circle. And we've done an episode about Les Cercles that was put into the Five Masterminds of 9/11 episode that we put out on 9/11 in 2023. So if you want to go back and listen to that and find out about this shadowy group called Les Cercles, the circle in French, I would encourage you to go back and listen to that episode because there's a lot of overlap. And of course, those guys were deeply involved in 9/11 too. So again, this is a group of people that are trying to form a one world government however they can. And it's not my speculation that they want to do that. They write books about it. They have conferences talking about it. They speak openly. It's only a secret to the extent that people choose not to listen to what they're saying. So that's kind of who this group it was in the 80s. But I want to go into a little bit of a little tangent here and talk about a company that got involved with the Pilgrims. And what that wound up doing is taking their company and turning it into a huge conglomerate. And that's a company called Bechtel. Now, Bechtel is think of it like Halliburton. Or you think of it like the company that John Perkins worked for in Confessions of an Economic Hitman, a company called Maine. Maine, which is no longer in existence. I think it's been absorbed or bought out or something. Maine, Halliburton, Bechtel. These are multinational engineering firms. These are the companies that come in and build freeways and airports and military bases and hydroelectric power plants and seaports and all the big stuff. Okay. And Bechtel has been a player for a while, but the connection that really sort of took them to a new level was made via Alan Dulles to the Rockefellers. And now, you know, after this introduction was made, it ceased being just the East Coast Eastern establishment, because Bechtel was located on the West Coast. And once this introduction was made, they basically joined forces, and they jokingly renamed it this group Rockefeller West. And so Bechtel's big in California. And after this, in Bohemian Grove, okay, the deeply connected to Bohemian Grove. And it was through this relationship with this, let's just call it the deep state, that Bechtel wound up getting the contract to build out Saudi Arabia, build out the Aramco project, America, Arab America Corporation, ARAMCO, which just recently went public a couple years ago in the largest IPO in the history of the planet, for I think $2 trillion of it's a monster. I know about Saudi Aramco because I went to boarding school for high school, and a lot of the kids in my boarding school would show up at my school as sophomores, not freshmen, sophomores, because the education system in Saudi Arabia basically just cut off after the ninth grade for the Western kids, and they were like, we have to go somewhere. So we would get all the Aramco kids. And so I've known about this company for a while. I've talked about it on this show a couple of times. And this is when you think about the early 70s, when Kissinger brokered that deal to create the petrodollar arrangement. Part of what this was like, okay, Saudi Arabia, you're going to need a massive like renovation project. You know, if you really are going to be the hub of all of the oil in the world, it's going to kind of, you know, you're going to be responsible for the bulk of the production, then we're really going to need to increase things like your capacity. We're going to need to build out the rail lines. We're going to need to build out the ports, the pipelines, and all that stuff. And the company that got the contract for that is Bechtel. And these deals happened because of the Pilgrim-connected Alan Dulles and the Pilgrim-connected Kissinger, Rockefeller, and the Carnegie Foundation. All of these groups together found their new friend in Bechtel's, that corporation in the family, and said, you know what we'd like for you to do is we'd like for you to be the construction arm of this massive project. And so an interesting component of this is that, you know, I mentioned earlier that George Shultz, Secretary of State under Reagan, he was the president. I mentioned he was a pilgrim, but he wasn't just the pilgrim. He was also the president of Bechtel from 1975 to 1982. And when he entered the Reagan administration as Secretary of State, he put his presidency of Bechtel on ice until he was done in office. And then he wound up returning to Bechtel as their director from 1989 until 2006. Does that ring a bell? Does that sound vaguely familiar to somebody else that was running a multinational engineering firm, put his CEO-ship on ice, allegedly put his assets in a blind trust, rotated into the Republican government and started all kinds of wars, and then left to go back to his job? Ring a bell? Anybody? Dick Cheney? Anybody? Anybody? I mean, he did it with Halliburton. So this is part of the game. If you're the group that is responsible for building large infrastructure projects, you can do business a couple of ways. You can identify some new area that needs infrastructure projects, and you can build the projects for them, a la Perkins' work with Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Nice topography you've got here in Ecuador. It'd be a great place for a hydroelectric power plant. Why don't you let my company build it? The IMF and World Bank have the loans set up. Financing is not a problem. We'll build it. You can do that. Or you can rebuild it after we bomb the shit out of a country. You can get the deal to come in as Halliburton did in KBR, which is a subsidiary of Halliburton. You can come in and build out the the roads. You can build out the military bases. You can build out the showers, which electrocuted, I think, like 80-something American troops and killed them. But, you know, of course, as Rumsfeld would say, mistakes were made. So you can do things a couple of different ways. But I'll tell you what, having the president of your multinational engineering firm in a position of high power inside the United States White House is always a good thing for business. It's a bad thing for your karma, of course. But if you're a shareholder in Halliburton, when Dick Cheney came in there and decided that they were going to bomb the Middle East to smithereens and then rebuild it, who got the contracts to rebuild it? Halliburton. There were no bid contracts. They didn't even put it out for bid. They didn't even say, like, they didn't even pretend like, oh, let's take RFPs from like 8 different companies and we'll pick the best. They didn't even bother to pretend that they were doing that. They just said, Dick, your company is going to be in charge of rebuilding all of this, and we're going to make you a fortune in the process. Let's talk about intelligence ties, because there's plenty of them when it comes to the Pilgrim Society. The three people put in charge of launching the National Security Agency, otherwise known as NSA, all three of those guys were pilgrims. Okay. So you go, what are these guys up to? Well, they're up to intelligence. They're think of it like this. If you're David Rockefeller and if you're the Rockefeller family, right? And it's the early 1900s and you're basically the equivalent of like a trillionaire. You want information. Information is one of the more valuable things that you can have. You can make a lot of money. You can get out of deals before they happen. You can position yourself accordingly if you have the right information. So it's no surprise that groups like Wall Street or groups like the Rockefeller families would create their own private intelligence agencies. The only surprise really is that they would be integrated as deeply as they are inside the American government. But listen, the Pilgrim Society, the three of the guys that started, the three guys that started the NSA were all pilgrims. So essentially you're thinking, well, you know, is this an intelligence opera? I mean, like, are they running it? Well, I'll put it to you this way. You're not going to become national security advisor if you're not a member of the Pilgrim Society. That's just the facts. It is, you're going to have their approval before the pilgrim-controlled think tanks will ever allow you to be considered to be the national security advisor. So the question, I think, out of that is, who are the pilgrim-connected think tanks? Well, here's the thing. You're going to recognize all the names. Okay. We'll start with one at the top. Council on Foreign Relations. Okay. Council on Foreign Relations is the American version of the British. I was just talking about it. Anyway, it'll come to me in a second. But the Council on Foreign Relations is deeply involved with American political affairs. And Chatham House was the name I was thinking of in the UK. CFR is loaded with pilgrims. In fact, it goes so far as to the research that I found said that 18% of all CFR members are members of the Pilgrim Society. So again, you don't have to be one or the other. You can be a member of multiple ones. If you listen to the Kissinger episode we did a couple weeks ago, it was like, he's a member of this group and that group and this group. You know, I mean, it just goes on and on. But the NGOs that have a ton of pilgrims inside of them, CFR, United Nations, that should go without saying because it's a Rockefeller connected thing. Carnegie Network in all of its capacity, the Rockefeller Network as well, and the JP Morgan Network, all filled with pilgrims. Trilateral Commission, I mentioned that earlier. Bilderberg, filled with them. So this, in order to understand it, maybe we'll rewind a little bit to like the early 1900s when the Pilgrim Society was founded, because this group back then was called the Money Trust. I kind of joke, you know, we sort of know them as the Eastern Establishment, but they were officially known as the Money Trust. That's sort of the name that they were given because it was a consortium of all these very powerful Wall Street banks. And at the time that the Pilgrim Society was founded, just to put this in perspective, this group that founded them, the Money Trust, was comprised just this group, just this network of people, comprised 47% of the entire value of the stock market. Okay. I mean, we can round up and just say half. This group, the Money Trust, and the companies that they owned were responsible for half of Wall Street in the early 1900s. Okay. And if you know anything about Wall Street, you know that part of the reason why the CIA was created was to be the intelligence arm of Wall Street. It's really what it is. And I know that I just got done saying that the NSA was started by three pilgrims, which sounds like the Bonina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. No. But it was started by three people that were members of the Pilgrim Society. So you would assume that the NSA is the Pilgrims Intelligence Agency. But in actuality, it's really the CIA. If you look at who started the CIA and you look at their ties to the Pilgrim Society, it's a dead on match. And Pilgrim Executive General Walter Bettel Smith and Pilgrim member Alan Dulles built the CIA. Okay. These two Pilgrim guys essentially built the CIA and turned it into what is known as the company. You might have heard it described as the company. And the company is basically responsible for running corporate protection rackets. Okay. And making sure that, or regime change operations, whatever. But the mission is gather intelligence that the bankers and the people that control the bankers and the people, the banking families, have access to all of this information well in advance.
Right.
And if a country seems to get out of line and they're not playing ball, they're not doing things that this group, the Money Trust, needs them to do, then you regime change them with your CIA. And if that doesn't work, then you have your Secretary of Defense start wars with them. It's very easy. So you know, you can have Rumsfeld go and gin up a war with Iraq by saying, you know, we found yellow cake uranium, and have Colin Powell go out there in that press conference and hold up and say, we've got aluminum tubes, ladies and gentlemen, aluminum tubes, God damn it. So you start wars this way. But the real point of the CIA is just to protect the business interests of oil companies such as Standard Oil, which the Rockefellers ran, and engineering firms like Bechtel, plus all of the other subsidiaries that are in that orbit, like the Rockefeller-controlled General Electric and banks like Brown Brother Harriman and all of the Wall Street banks that you might have heard of. So once you start to look at it like that, it takes on, it's a little bit of a different meaning. The NSA and the CIA, you go, oh yeah, they're intelligence agencies for the United States. Are they? They're never working on our behalf. You know that, right? The truth is, they're intelligence agencies for the Money Trust. Their guys started the agencies, both of them. And the information is more valuable than gold, more valuable than dollars. They run the Federal Reserve. They can print up dollars all day long. The money isn't the thing. It's the power and the control and the advanced knowledge that's worth more than money. So let's talk about who this Pilgrim family network is, because when we talk about the Money Trust and we talk about the Eastern Establishment and we talk about the WASPs and this group, you know, you want to go like, who is this? Well, so first of all, I have to say this, big thanks to ISGP Studies for tremendous research. They have all kinds of information on their website that you can use to find out about a variety of institutions that you never really hear about. So I love their work. And of course, I'm happy to pass along the credit for a lot of this information to them. And when you map out this family network and take a look at who is behind this, of course, I just mentioned the Rockefellers and the Carnegies. You're going to get those. Of course, you would expect that. The Warburg family was deeply involved with the Pilgrim Society. The DuPont family, the Astor, John Jacob Astor family, Watson, the Watson family. What's Watson? IBM, Watson, you know, the Watson computer, IBM, that's connected to that. The Drexel family, JP Morgan, that entire lineage, the Mellon family, the Harriman family. You're starting to recognize some of the names. They sound like banks. These sound like banks. Brown Brother Harriman. Yes, yes. The Loeb family, Kuhn Loeb, the Schiffs, the Vanderbilts, Anderson Cooper, the Sassones, the Windsors, Dodge, Ford. You know, you're like, oh, car companies too? Yes. Who was making the Model Ts back then? Who was changing the world, right? They were, you know, the car manufacturers in the early 1900s that were deeply involved with the Pilgrim Society is no different than Google and Facebook and Twitter and all these companies being involved in what's going on currently. They're the transformational technology companies of our era, much in the same way that these auto manufacturing companies that brought us factories and assembly lines and all those concepts, they were deeply involved with the Pilgrims. So if you want to change the world, you have to be heavily invested in the technological sector that's going to be driving the transformation. And in the early 1900s, it was obviously the auto manufacturers. Nowadays, it's skewed a little bit more tech and banking heavy. So let's talk about some of the banks and financial organizations that are filled to the brim with Pilgrims. And you're going to recognize pretty much all of these. And I wish the list wasn't as long as it is, but it is. Bank of England, which kind of go without saying, we started with that. Barclays Bank, Blackstone Group, JP Morgan, NM Rothschild and Sons, Drexel and Company, the Federal Reserve, filled with Pilgrims, Fidelity, Goldman Sachs, Mellon Bank, Oppenheimer, Brown Brothers Harriman, Citibank, Chase National, Chase Bank, Morgan Stanley, Payne Webber, First National Bank, Kuhn Loeb, Lazard, Lehman Brothers, formerly known as Lehman Brothers, Solomon Brothers. Remember Building 7? Solomon Brothers Building. That's what it was. That's the official name of it. The Rockefeller Family Banks and S.G. Warburg. These are all the groups that have been just banks and financial organizations. It's not limited to that, of course, but banks have all the money. Banks have a ton of the power. And if you're a group like Pilgrims, you want power and influence and access to cash. Got to have cash. Got to have access to it. But of course you do. You have the Federal Reserve. You literally own the goose that lays the golden eggs. Moving on to some other industries, law firms. I don't know too many well-known law firms. There's really only a few that I know, but they showed up on this list. Sullivan and Cromwell, you've probably heard of that one, filled to the brim with Pilgrims, and Winthrop, Stimson, Putnam, and Roberts. I've heard of that. Insurance companies, you know, you want to make a fortune in life. Get in the insurance industry. There's so much money in there. AIG, deeply involved. MetLife Insurance, Mutual Life Insurance, Lloyd's of London, and then some other companies. Other companies that maybe you don't really think would be as involved in world government, but you would be wrong, and that would be De Beers, the diamond mining, Corning Glass, Chrysler, Forbes, General Motors, Dodge, Rio Tinto, U.S. Steel, which was recently sold to the Japanese, R.J. Reynolds, which used to be, well, make cigarettes, IBM, and General Electric. So these are big names. Okay, these are companies that have been around the block and have been profitable for a century. They've been making a fortune there. So if you want to, you know, if you want to just know who's on your radar as far as companies that might not have your best interest, well, you know, if you know that the founders of these companies were deeply involved with the Pilgrims and that the Pilgrims are trying their best to put together, to the extent that they can, the framework for world government, then you understand that these companies are helping in some way, shape, or form to finance that. So you can make up a decision whether or not you want to buy a Dodge because you know that the General Motors and the Dodge company has been involved with the Pilgrim Network since the beginning, since the early 1900s. Let's move on to the media, because this is where I think it's kind of interesting when we talk about ownership of the media. There's a lot of speculation about who owns the media and who runs the media. And who runs the media and who owns the media are two different things, okay? The New York Times, let's talk about them. Owned by the Ox-Sulzberg family since 1896, this family has been multi-generational pilgrims, okay? They bought this New York Times paper just a few years before the Pilgrim Society launched. And when it did, they were involved from the very beginning. Because, of course, you have to have control of the media. We know this. We understand this. Time Magazine, founded by Pilgrim Henry Luce in 1923. His grandson, Henry Luce III, was named the president of the Pilgrim Society in 1997. And if you remember anything about some of the shows that we've done on propaganda, Time Magazine ring a bell to you? You remember Richard Stengel, the chief propagandist from the Obama White House, who sat on that panel on the Council on Foreign Relations on video and said, I frankly don't have a problem with propaganda. I think propaganda is good. Every company, every country uses it, and you need to use it. And when I was in the Obama White House, my nickname was chief propagandist. You know what his job used to be? He was the editor-in-chief of Time Magazine. But of course, it shouldn't come as a surprise to you that Time Magazine is lying to you. Time Magazine was founded by Henry Luce, who was a pilgrim. His grandson went on to run the entire organization. So here's one, doesn't really have the sort of sparkle that it used to have. Reader's Digest, run by the Pilgrims since 1940. Since the 40s, I should say. So that's a long time. What about Newsweek? Newsweek is owned by the Pilgrim-connected Muir family. So you've got that. And then, of course, there's RCA, Radio Corporation of America, which is located in Rockefeller Center. General Electric took over RCA, and they spun off. They wound up creating NBC. If you see National Broadcasting Company, if you see NBC from Rockefeller Center, you know, hey, today's show here live from Rockefeller Center. This is why they've been there for 100 years. They've been in that location in Midtown Manhattan. So you can check it out and see the connections there. But it's not just NBC. Also, CBS was run by Pilgrims as board of directors. Henry Kissinger was on the board of directors of CBS, and he was a longtime pilgrim. Walter Cronkite, who you would know as a, I don't know, media whore, I guess. He was a pilgrim as well. So there's a lot of people that are in the news media that have some dual loyalties. You know, the loyalty isn't to the truth in the media. The loyalty is to the agenda. And the agenda is that of a world government. The agenda on the media side of things is to downplay relevant events that should be nightly news, and talk about things that shouldn't be nightly news as if they're really important. Like, do we invade Iran next week, the week after that, or 3 weeks from now? You know, like they create the talking points in which people are now going out into the world saying, oh shit, when are we going to invade Iran? When are we going to go to start the war with Iran? It's like, well, you wouldn't be even thinking about that because they haven't done anything to us. You wouldn't be thinking about that unless the media was telling you to think, to consider these options. And so your relationship with the media should be one of distrust, obviously, but also you need to know, hey, listen, these groups, this is the NBC, General Electric, CBS, these are run by the Pilgrim Society. Like, this is essentially run by the same network of people that David Rockefeller is involved in. Why would you trust them with anything? Why would you listen to them about anything that they want to do? So and part of this as well is you get into the Skull and Bones eventually, because there's a lot of overlap between that, in part because of the geography of where Skull and Bones has located at Yale, Yale being a very popular deep state university, especially with the Pilgrims, and Skull and Bones being this sort of secret society. And Skull and Bones is like, the people from Skull and Bones that you know of are Pilgrims as well as being Bonesmen. The people that are Bonesmen that you don't know of, they aren't Pilgrims. They're sort of like the lower level Bonesmen, right? They're just children. It's like a fraternity of children from well-to-do families at Yale. And they work like a very small aspect of the much larger and frankly much more elderly version of which is the Pilgrim Society, one that's been around for a long time. And so what you find with the Pilgrims is that they're more like old-timey, you know, like the guys lighting cigars with $100 bills, that type of people. But it's not like the young tech guys. It's not that. In fact, if we're being honest, the Pilgrim Society is kind of like on its way out. It's powerful for sure, but it was started in a time when the world was very different, and it doesn't hold the sort of prominence that it used to. You know, and listen, the Skull and Bones people, you've got Geronimo's skull in there, and I'm sure they're all fucking it or whatever they do to it. You know, the jerking off in the coffin on your fellow brother is, or the, I don't know, I guess the guy's got to get in the coffin and jerk off. I don't know how it all works. I'm not a Bonesman. Wouldn't want to be. It all sounds very gay to me too, if I'm being completely honest. But the ones that the people that you hear about that come out of Skull and Bones are the ones that come out with that are attached to the Pilgrim Society as well. You get Daniel Coit Gilman, who incorporated Skull and Bones into the Russell Trust. He's the founder of the Carnegie Foundation. He's one of the Carnegie guys. I mean, he's a Bonesman, but also a Pilgrim. President William Howard Taft, you remember him, the super fat president, and that's the only reason why people know who he was. He was both as well. Avril Harriman, governor of New York, ambassador to the Soviet Union, Brown Brother Harriman, a bank that was connected to George H.W. Bush and Prescott Bush, and and Henry Luce, the founder of Time Magazine, who I mentioned back in 1923, he was a Bonesman and Pilgrim as well. So there's some of these guys that have a little bit of overlap and come out of Yale, go on to do things that would get them mentioned on this show. Those guys are all connected to the Pilgrim Society, right? So it's a group of people that are, you know, it's the rich white devils. You know how the black community talks about white people, how they're you know, a bunch of honky mayonnaise sandwich eating crackers, white devils, and with all this money treating people poorly. That's these people. That's who they're referring to. The Eastern establishment, the Ivy League group, this group that come, the Anglo-American establishment. These are the people that you really need to worry about. It's like when the black community says, well, the white community is out to get us, and everything's like, no, let's separate that. Let's clear that up a little bit more. You're talking about the powerful people going after the powerless people. I gotta let the black community in on a little secret here. Even though I am as white as you can be, if I were any whiter, I'd be clear. I'll tell you, it's not whites versus blacks. It's just powerful people versus the powerless. And these powerful white Eastern elites will stomp on me just as quickly as they'll stomp on the black community. There's no loyalty there because of skin color, of course. They don't care about that. So it's important to understand that when you know, people have this impression in their head of the octopus, you know, this banking elite, this cartel, this group, this Rockefeller connected, Standard Oil connected, CIA connected group of intelligence assets and multi-billionaire, trillionaire banking families and the connections that they have to offshore banking and all this stuff. All of these people are members of the Pilgrim Society, and it is in their vested interest to make sure that you aren't talking about this, because they don't want you to recognize that group that they're in. That's why it doesn't get talked about. It's not because it isn't dangerous and it isn't powerful. It's all those things, of course, but it's because they don't want you to know about them, because if you know about them, then it becomes harder for them to continue to do the things that they have set out to do. They'll let you know about NATO and the World Bank and the IMF and United Nations and the Rockefeller Foundation. And they're very upfront about all those things. And all those things are sort of outgrowths of the Rockefeller family. And so is the Pilgrim Society, because they're deeply involved in it. But you just aren't allowed to really talk too much about this. So that's it's like the first rule of Fight Club. You know, you don't talk about the Pilgrim Society. I think that is the first. Is that the first rule of Fight Club? I'm not sure. It's something like that. But once you find out about it, boy, and you take a look back through some of the administrations in the United States, when you get into the Reagan administration, and you know that he was picked to become the president of the United States at Bohemian Grove. You know that story. I don't know if you haven't heard it, go, you can look it up. But he was basically tapped to become the president back in the 70s when he was at Bohemian Grove. And the one of the families that was deeply involved with Bohemian Grove is the Bechtel family. And they're pilgrims, right? So it's no surprise that the when Bechtel's run by a pilgrim, George Shultz, and the Pilgrim Society gets together with Les Cercel and they decide Ronald Reagan is going to be the next president of the United States. Well, then you can't be too surprised when they say, and just to make sure, we're going to put the head of Bechtel in your administration, Ronnie, and he's going to become your Secretary of State for a while, for 6 years. And he's going to be in charge of all of that. And when he's done, we're going to ask him to come back and work for us. So this is a lot like the Trilateral Commission, what they do. Of course, again, Rockefeller, Brzezinski founded Trilateral Commission. You cannot be a member of the Trilateral Commission and be in the active administration at the same time. So you put your membership on ice, much like George Shultz put his presidency of Bechtel on ice so he could rotate into the Reagan administration, do what needs to be done. And then when he's done, go right back to Bechtel and run that for a while as well. Same situation when you've got guys like Rumsfeld doing that with Rand Corporation. You've got guys like Cheney doing that. These guys aren't coming out of office because getting these jobs because they're really good at being the vice president. They're the vice president because of these jobs. It's not that you were vice president. Now that's on your resume, and now you can go become the CEO of Halliburton. No. The only reason why you were vice president is because you already were the CEO of Halliburton. That's how it works. If you weren't, you wouldn't be in consideration. You know, you have to bring something else to the table besides that. So, besides just, you know, being Al Gore or something, an ornament, an ornament in the administration. But I thought it was interesting to get into this group, because it doesn't get talked about all that much, the Eastern Establishment. And of course, given what we've seen recently with the Ivy League schools getting overrun by woke ideology and watching the students turn on Israel and do all that good stuff, Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, they are part of this WASP elite. But they're missing a lot of the W's, if you know what I mean, these days, due to affirmative action and other things. They took the W out of WASP elite and threw it away. But now you know. So if you know, now you can kind of keep your ears open for this, and you probably won't hear it reported too much mentioning pilgrims. And again, it goes back to branding, because it's kind of a lame name. You're like, oh no, the pilgrims are coming to enslave me in a world government with their muskets and their belt buckle brown hats and their stupid socks and all that stuff. It's like, well, yeah, those are the pilgrims that you read about in your history books. But I assure you, if David Rockefeller is involved, it's a super dangerous group. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. Come check out the new website, macroaggressions.io. There's all kinds of information there. You can catch my radio show on tntradio.live. That happens Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern every single day, probably for the rest of my life. Take care, everybody. I'll see you again later.